Jeff Goldblum vomits on Gina Davis, Dennis Miller battles vampires, and snakes infest a Monday to Friday plane this week on 30-2010.
30-2010, here we go again. Analyzing decades, sitting with our friends, those were different days. And there's so much to say.
Welcome to another episode of 30-2010, your weekly look back at what happened in music, movies, TV, and video games with slight dalliances in wrestling.
And news in last week, our personal lives during a national tragedy. Sorry, everybody.
But yeah, 30-2010, we look back 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. That's 86, 96, and 06.
To this specific week.
This specific week, which is August 12th through the 18th. Mm-hmm. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elst.
I'm Christopher Antista. Hi.
I'm Diana Goodman.
I'm Dave Dole.
Oh, boy.
Dave Rudden, sorry.
Oh, what a blast from the past we're going to have.
For all.
But we'll start in the week of this week in 1986, August 12th through the 18th. August 18th on that day, actually. Dave?
Yeah, Howard Stern's radio show was syndicated for the first time. So
in 86.
Yeah, previously 86. It only aired
show
on...
Show me your boobies.
Yeah, it had previously only aired on WNBC.
WNBC.
It was syndicated for a Philadelphia radio station, WYSP. Mm-hmm. Is that familiar at all?
No, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically the start of his empire.
It's weird. When we first started podcasting, mm-hmm. we were the video game podcast that cursed. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Everybody's like, these Howard Stern wannabes. And like, I have never heard an episode of the Howard Stern show because it was never syndicated. It's never syndicated.
Wait, did you at least watch it on E or something?
I thought that was terrible because that was always like just blurry tits in standard definition. Didn't care for that. What I did do for some reason, I have read both of his books numerous times. So I know the stations. Yeah. I know the history. I know the John DeBella saga. I know about the Whack Pack. I've never heard it for myself. Wow. Just read it in his books.
Wow.
It ended up syndicated in St. Louis, so I heard it there.
Yeah, and never heard it.
And we listened to it occasionally, but not a whole lot.
Never heard it in my life.
Yeah. I remember there was a big deal when it came to LA and started going up against the other morning shows. Mm. And he started, you know, there was constant smack talking and sending planes with banners past, you know, I remember when he finally beat KLOS's morning show, it's, you know, the first three letters of loser are LOS. It was a big banner and just flew around. And yeah, it was interesting because like I'd hear him and it's like there's two extremes to him. There's, mm-hmm. you know, show me your tits extremes where he just gets, I just find kind of boring and, you know, it's just puerile. Yeah. It's like, whatever, boobies, haha, sex is funny. And he's also like a really good interviewer, though.
I think that's the evolution
of
him as a broadcaster. And this is over the period of 40 years. Yes, it seems dipshittery. The morning jock dipshittery is, well, it's the 80s. It's like, there's hundreds of people who are doing that.
Yeah, some of it's still there. But I have to recommend his interview with Bill Murray.
Really?
You can find it online. Bill Murray's a hard guy to get talking, and Stern can do it.
And that's what I remember reading his book. Like, why are people telling you all this?
He is great at interviewing men. Because otherwise, with women, it's usually like, how long?
Who'd you sleep with?
You do anything? But I listened to him a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he was a New York shock jock. Mm-hmm. And I even got Sirius XM for a while. Like, when he first made the jump, I was like, I got to listen to... I can't stop listening to Howard.
Who thought that was going to take off?
Yeah.
I cannot believe that works. Yeah. And he's still there.
Yeah.
Like, 10 years.
I mean,
over
now,
10 years.
Now he's like Johnny Carson of Sirius. It's like, I'll do 3 shows a week.
Yeah.
4 months a year. Nah, not that brief, but like...
And he has like another show... To wrap up his show, like a talking Stern.
This is
my understanding.
When
of it. I don't even
Sirius,
know.
There was 2 Howard Stern stations.
Wow.
It's like the Howard Stern pre-show, the Howard Stern post-show, Howard Stern news, Howard Stern classic. So much stuff.
Howard Stern going Calypso.
Howard Stern dry. Howard Stern light.
Movies this week, August 12th to the 18th in 1986. So this one is this is kind of an SEO. We always joke about, like, you know, things happening and then you throw in Ugg boots, Air Jordans.
Yes.
Fill out
all your keywords.
This is a movie, Half Moon Street,
which I'd
never heard of.
Yeah. Right.
Stars Sigourney Weaver and Michael Caine.
Right.
Which is 2 people together. I'm like,
really?
My eyes cross and I'm like, what? The first movie produced by RKO. since 1957.
Wow.
Yeah, I tease something about gestation. That movie is The Jet Pilot,
which was
filmed in 1951, and because Howard Hughes is a tinkerer, it was released. That's just the last. They were done in the early 50s. That's just the last movie they released. And I wish we could devote a whole segment to RKO.
They've had a very long and strange history. Yeah. They kept getting bought by people who didn't know what they were doing, and then they had failure after failure after failure, and then they get bought by somebody else, or someone would buy the company that bought them.
But it's like in name only for the most part.
It's in name only. Because really. They sold the studio, actual backlot
Did this RKO movie come out of nowhere?
There it is. I was waiting for it.
Googling it? Randy Orton's signature move has taken over the search results for RKO.
For sure.
It is very sad.
Yeah.
But
it's a good move.
It's a good move, but it's because RKO is responsible for, I would say, my favorite things in the universe pre-1950. Mm. They distributed all of Disney's short films, including, I think Snow White and Pinocchio, Citizen Kane, King Kong.
Yep.
These are all... But I don't care who you are. Go watch these right now.
The source of your favorite vines since 2015.
Yes, out of nowhere.
But yeah, they went from like a movie in 57, then nothing, and then Half Moon Street.
Half Moon
this
Street,
movie that I've never
Sigourney
heard.
Sigourney Weaver plays Dr. Lawrence Slaughter, a London researcher who at night dabbles as a prostitute.
Oh, okay.
This movie sounds insane.
I want a prostitute with Slaughter in the name.
Exactly. Why is her name Slaughter?
I seem to recall maybe this has a bunch of nudity in it. She might get naked, but I also always confuse Half Moon Street with Two Moon Junction. So, which I know, I think Sherilyn Fenn gets naked a ton. So
you can't spell slaughter without laughter. So.
This episode is brought to you by Mr. Skin. You need to go do the research for us. So we didn't get a free account.
After that is The Boy Who Could Fly.
Right. That I have a fascinating footnote on.
Okay.
Because that was I talked a lot last week about John Carpenter being awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The Boy Who Could Fly, really weird movie about a girl relating to a boy with autism, and I have vague memories of this. Might have the power of flight. It could be a metaphoric fantasy, but what it looks like is like somebody saw E.T. and like, these scenes are amazing, and the Superman flying scenes suck. I can do them better. The flying scenes are astonishing because there's just two teenagers being thrown throughout a fair and dragged through the sky. It looks really cool as practical effects. But the movie is directed and written by Nick Castle, who had just made The Last Starfighter, also made the Dennis the Menace movie. He's most famous for his association with John Carpenter. I think he's in the Coupe de Villes, the band that plays the Big Trouble Little China scene. But of course, I'm beating around the bush. He's Michael Myers. He is Nick Castle, the writer-director of this movie, is Michael Myers.
Oh, wow.
The character in the first Halloween
movie. The Shape?
The Shape. That's what they call it. That's the name. Also interesting, The Boy Who Could Fly. And there's multiple sequences of a teenage boy jumping out of windows and... also, Fred Savage's debut, I should say that.
Wow.
Film debut. But the movie is one of the only movies with a disclaimer in the front of the original VHS. Like,
children can't fly?
Children, you cannot fly.
Don't jump out of windows.
I couldn't find it, but there's an alternate version when the movie concludes. Instead of a stinger promising Thor, the next Boy Who Could Fly movie, it is a star, Jay Underwood, delivering a message about how he was not actually flying, how these were ropes and pulleys. Jeez. And kids, you should not try this. And I don't recall that happening in another film.
Was there a voiceover Fred Savage that was like, and in that moment I learned I couldn't
This
actually,
was the most important credits of my life.
I couldn't actually fly.
My dad.
But the big movie this week, well, now there's a bigger one after this for me, but Chris, I think you were into the following film.
America, get ready for a new breed of heroes.
Hey, open up! I'm a special officer. Give me your car.
What are you not? Get out of my sight.
That is the same scream that John Candy did in Spaceballs when the big statue landed on his feet.
Yeah, this is...
She rolled the window up on his fingers, I should say.
This would be Armed and Dangerous. Not all that remarkable, but when I was obsessed with Comedy Central, we got it in the 90s, and they could not afford jack shit. This movie was played over and over again. Starring John Candy, Eugene Levy, and Meg Ryan, who we had talked about as in a minor role in Top Gun. She is the lead. This is the first Meg Ryan lead.
Totally hear Penn Jillette sing. Armed and Dangerous.
Armed and Dangerous on Comedy Central. God, I love that voice.
I'm kind of bummed. I don't want to see John Candy and Eugene Levy in a movie together unless they're the Schmengi brothers.
I want the
Schmengi brothers movie. Where they also, thank you for the cabbage rolls and coffee.
Also in the movie is Robert Loggia.
Sorry.
Robin Love, but Levy.
Kendi.
Levy.
Kendi.
Levy.
Okay, so I have another dumb clip here, because I thought this was mildly interesting. I believe part of it was written by Harold Ramis, but it is one of the few writing credits from Brian Grazer. Grazer being... Diana knows why that's important. Brian Grazer being Ron Howard's business partner at Imagine Entertainment. You can even see him in the last season of Arrested Development. He plays himself. He has produced 150 movies. His body of work is insane. The names, the things he's attached to. This is one of the only movies he wrote. And he was on an episode of Mark Maron's WTF somewhat recently. And he's so old school Hollywood, says a couple, puts his foot in his mouth a couple times saying things that aren't appropriate. But I think Mark Maron like asked him about somebody he might have fired. And he's like, I can't say. And then he goes on to describe what I clearly can tell is Armed and Dangerous, but refuses to name what the movie is. And I have a quick clip of this because it's funny.
I did have one movie. I was thinking about this the other day. There was a movie that I produced. I co-wrote it. Harold Ramis and I wrote it. Mm-hmm. It was a flop. Mm-hmm. It was with John Candy and Meg Ryan. And the director, who was the wrong director, I said, you know, you can't have the actor, you can't have the protagonist say to the girl, you're a bitch. We're going to hate him for that. He says, what are you saying to me? I said, I think we shouldn't say that. I think they should say different things. And John Candy's shaking his head. Yes, Brian, you're right. The guy goes, you know what? You direct it. And I had to direct the day. He left. So,
I just love how he's kind of old school Hollywood. I'm not going to name the movie or the director, but it stars John Candy and Meg Ryan.
It rhymes with Armed and Dangerous.
You did kind of name the person, just so you know, Mr. Grazer. Just adorable.
Yeah. This is another one of those movies that I recognize the movie poster / VHS cover, just like what was the last week with Bobcat?
One Crazy Summer.
One Crazy Summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just spending so much time in video stores seeing the same VHS.
You know what kind of defines independent video stores for me in the 80s? Speaking of John Candy, you have to know. The Who's Harry Crumb mobile and sticky sticky things. I think I have to go on eBay and try and buy one.
Yeah, just put it in that window. Wow, that'd be great. Yes, that would be... I know exactly what you're talking about.
John Candy. A man you love, John
I
Candy,
love
don't
John
you?
Candy.
He's hard not
so
to like.
Great.
An odd movie star, though.
Yeah.
Terrible films. Many terrible films.
I had a couple. I recall Only the Lonely being very sweet, actually.
Yeah, I even like Delirious.
Yeah, Delirious has a lot of funny parts. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, because of the Schmengi brothers. His
like
SCTV work was amazing.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yum.
Just put... I can't think of anybody else in a sketch show ever that could kick so much ass as John Candy did.
What sketch we did where we
except just... maybe Eugene Levy. Eugene Levy was so good. His Perry Como's greatest hits is like the funniest bit I've ever seen, because Eugene Levy is like, because he's really, it's smooth, easy listening. So he's like asleep. He's like lying on the stage with the microphone like next to his head on the floors. Celebrate good times. Come on.
But man, John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and Uncle Buck is just like, I'm making the kissy
my
fingers.
Yes. Like
me. I like me. My wife likes me. I'm going to cry. The other movie, though, this week that I friggin' love.
Human teleportation, molecular decimation, breakdown, and reformation is inherently purging.
Where our greatest creations meet our deepest fears.
Something went wrong, Seth. When you went through, something went wrong.
That is The Fly.
That is. Right. Is that where Jeff Goldblum turns into a Cronenberg?
Yes.
Yep. Rick and Morty reference, everybody.
All right. Just around the table, best remake ever?
John Carpenter's The Thing. I'd put it. They're like neck and neck.
They are neck and neck. Yeah, that is a really tough.
I don't know, man. Is good at remaking movies. It seems.
Yeah, I mean, and
that 98 Psycho though, like it's right up there.
Don't fuck yourself. No, I think this might be the best remake where the original is also still really, really good. The original Thing from Another World is pretty slow, a little boring, and stagey. But the original, original The Fly, is so good.
Yeah, which is 58 or something like
that. Yeah, something like
late
that.
Late 50s.
Yeah,
Jeff Goldblum, Cronenberg. This is Cronenberg's most successful, profitable movie.
Wow,
at least up to this point. I don't know about afterwards, but
I do know.
I
on
could
the DVD,
believe that
on the DVD is a terrible video game based on finding clips from the movie.
Wow.
Yes.
So this is a thing. There was a Simpsons Bart the Fly or whatever.
Yes.
There was a Treehouse of Horror, but it is
help
like
me. Help me. That used to. Oh man, I saw this movie when I was a kid because my parents would like show me old movies because there wouldn't be like swearing or violence or sex or anything.
True.
And that's honestly how I got to be the way I am today. Thanks. Thank you, Mom and Dad. But I remember them showing this to me when I was, I don't know, like 7 or 8, and that the whole thing is creepy, but that ending is fucking terrifying when you're a kid, because now basically he's a fly with a person head and he's stuck in a spider web. And that's him going, help me,
But like the path that Jeff Goldblum takes through this, like he is so good as like an already kind of neurotic scientist.
This is his breakout role, I believe.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and you just watch, so basically, yeah, the plot is just, he's a scientist who invents a teleporter, but it deconstructs matter, like he said in the trailer there. And when it reconstructs you on the other side, a fly accidentally gets in, and when it comes in, it basically mixes their DNA, and then over time, he starts growing weird hairs, his eyes get really darty around, and he just starts getting weirder and weirder behavior.
His dick falls off.
His dick falls off?
His dick falls off. It's in a jar.
What a joke about that.
It's in a jar in the bathroom cabinet.
God damn. But yeah,
look for it. It's fucking there.
The effects of this stuff where he's like, his skin starts falling off.
Oh, man.
So the guy, Chris Wallace, won an Oscar for this movie,
really?
I think.
For makeup?
For the makeup, and effects.
Yeah,
he's also known
it.
For doing the same scene of the Nazi melting in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
And I guess had a hand in creating the Gremlins as well.
That's
like,
awesome.
Like the suits or the puppetry or the stuff in that. Cool. But that's great. But yeah, just the path that this movie takes. It's also such a like small movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they never like, we must go to the observatory and solve it. It's like, no, it's just him in this like kind of grimy, unsettling lab, and you can feel the grossness of him becoming a human fly.
Mm. Yeah.
And
he's losing his humanity.
Yeah, and they do it in such an interesting way, because like as a kid, I didn't watch this because I was like, flies are dumb. And like, that's how you make decisions.
Tell that to Baxter Stockman, little Brett.
Well, he's a wiener villain. Who cares about Baxter Stockman? I'm here to see Slash and Bebop and Rocksteady. Not a dumb fly. But then I saw it again as an adult, and I was like, this movie's awesome.
Yeah.
It is so good, and you should watch it right now. Mm-hmm. So here's a scene of after he's slowly becoming a fly, and again, the effects of him, this slow transformation, and that's why it works so well, just this slow crawl towards that. And the movie just feels gross the whole time of like, what would it be like to slowly shed your skin and get like weird fly crap going on? But this is him. Gina Davis comes over to his house, and he then barfs on the food in front of him like the fly would do.
That's disgusting.
So he's just like with his Jeff Goldblum delivery of like, oh, I'm sorry, threw up on food.
Barfed on food.
But like just the goo that comes out of his mouth is like a He-Man slime trap.
Mm-hmm.
Just realized we watched Invasion of the Body Snatchers, another remake that Jeff Goldblum was involved with.
Yeah.
Okay, that might be another. That's a third.
More body horror.
Great remake where the original was really good too.
But also like, I'm a straight man, but I'm watching this movie, 1978, and I'm like, Jeff Goldblum has been attractive for 40 years.
Yeah.
That's insane. How does he do that?
Yeah.
He looks great. Even
he looks great now.
Kimmy Schmidt, he has a great role in the new season.
He looks great when he's raping Charles Bronson's daughter in Death Wish. You goddamn rich cunt. That's Jeff Goldblum's first line. It's great.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good.
Sorry I said that.
But no, it makes me want to buy a new apartment even though I have rent control. It's weird.
But no, I would really recommend watching The Fly. It's such a good movie. And it ended up having, like, strangely, weirdly enough, a toy made out of The Fly.
Really?
The McFarlane movie monsters things.
A posable action figure, Brett. No, they're not toys. Don't make me throw them away, girlfriend.
They are basically statues with, like, their arms move, but these are not toys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was, like, Freddy, Jason, Leatherface, and there was one that was like The Fly after his full transformation, if you would want the toy of that. But it's really cool. And just again, the movie, the box cover, the poster, the teleportation device just looks so cool. Mm-hmm. And with the steam or the smoke pouring out of it and the backlighting, it looks great.
And this got a sequel too. I've never seen that one.
Yeah, the
Eric Stoltz,
the effects dude, I think ended up directing Fly 2.
Really?
Yeah.
It was written by Mick Garris, a guy I like a lot.
But then also out this same week, they really pack him in the 80s. Is Manhunter.
Manhunter, which might not set off any bells in your head, but it should, because it's been one of the weirdly most enduring franchises of the last 30 years.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. And
yes,
I don't like almost all of it.
Nope. It's a franchise that has two good movies, and then everything that came after did not need to exist.
This is the first of three versions of this story
yeah.
that you've seen, and the last one being the absolute best. This is we are talking about what, Deanna?
We are talking about the first movie with Hannibal Lecter in it.
Yes. Yes, the first adaptation of
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon, and of course it was Brett Ratner's Red Dragon, and then Hannibal, which in Hannibal is one of the best things I've ever seen on television. I cannot believe it.
The show.
I hate everything else about Hannibal Lecter and all those movies. Like Anthony, Red Dragon is terrible. Hannibal is even worse.
Hannibal was bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Dude, I saw it once opening night. And
Ray Liotta eating his own brain.
Yes, that's all I remember is Ray Liotta eating his own brain. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is probably worth it. Like, I don't care how much toil or anguish everyone went through to make this movie, but this is on film forever. Is Ray Liotta eating his brain?
Ray Liotta was good in that. I'll give him that. Silence of the Lambs is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's really good.
It's a masterpiece.
But this is Manhunter.
Brian Cox.
Really good.
Is Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
How would people know Brian? I love him as
Daredevil?
Mr. Guggenheim in Rushmore. But he's one of the strikers in the many Wolverine films.
Yeah, he's the one in X2.
Yeah, X2.
Oh, okay.
He's in Super Troopers for some reason.
Super Troopers.
Yes, he's hilarious.
But yeah, he's the first Hannibal Lecter talking to, oh my God, what's that guy's name?
William Peterson.
Oh, I'd love to live and die in L.A. He's a star of that film.
Oh, that was so good. But yeah, William Peterson, probably CSI is probably where people know him from now.
Huh. But I guess it says it like didn't do great at the box office when it premiered. So I'm wondering what made them... I guess 5-6 years later want to do Silence of the Lambs.
That's probably a pretty fucking good question. Like, why would you want to revisit this series in a sequel?
It's not a... I mean, I guess technically it's a sequel.
Yeah, it's not
but...
There's no Starling.
There's no... They don't relate to each other at all. There's no connection except that they both have Hannibal Lecter in prison talking to a detective
about
somebody else.
We were just talking about this because something was writing for Talking Simpsons. Silence of the Lambs won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Adapted Screenplay.
Wow.
Yep.
That's insane. And the other fact, what I love, is that Anthony Hopkins is in Silence of the Lambs for 16 minutes, and he has the record of like least amount of screen time to win a Best Actor, not a Best Supporting Actor, Best Actor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which
sucks. I think he's a supporting actor.
But
fair.
But I think that sadly was everybody's introduction to this character, which is still fun, played by Brian Cox, and you can hear that right here.
You want to know how he's choosing them, don't you?
I thought you might have some ideas.
Why should I tell you?
You get to see the file on this case. And there's another reason.
Pray tell.
Thought you might be curious to see if you're smarter than the person I'm looking for.
Then by implication, you think you're smarter than me since you caught me.
No. I know that I'm not smarter than you.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
That's so weird.
Now if you that seems really familiar. Mm-hmm. They did that dialogue is straight out of the book because they did it verbatim in Red Dragon.
Red Dragon.
And they did it verbatim on the Hannibal show.
Yeah. Yeah, and though it's great,
the Hannibal
like
show.
Tyler, it's starring Hannibal. Hannibal Buress.
He shrugs his shoulders.
What's great, like Tyler and I, when he was still living, we were living together. We were watching Hannibal.
When he was still with us,
and when he was still alive, in on the West Coast. But that Dave just kissed and pointed at the sky. That it's when you watch that scene in Red Dragon, it's like the first 2 minutes, and the first season of Hannibal is. All that scene, basically, all that sequence is Hannibal trying to help him solve murders, and how elegantly it's done in the Brian Fuller version, how clumsy it's done in Red Dragon compared to how simple it's done here in Manhunter.
Manhunter is it's really good. I mean, it's definitely better than Red Dragon, even though Red Dragon is much, much closer to the novel. Manhunter
film.
It's very, I mean, it's very 80s. You could hear that sort of weird, tinkly
I mean, Brett Ratner's
music. Yeah, the Brett Ratner one.
Everything Brett Ratner does is terrible.
Yeah, the Brett Ratner one, I mean, is slavish to the book, and this one is not, has a different ending. But yeah, it's just a better movie.
Rush Hour 1 and 2, man.
No, those were fine.
It's
those
like,
are the only two.
But it's like Michael Mann's
Money
coming
talks.
Off of Miami Vice,
yes.
So that style is in there a little bit, but not so crazy in Miami Vicey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, good movie.
Just looking on the wiki, and it was originally going to be called Red Dragon,
right?
Like the novel, but producer Dino Dave.
De La Rentis. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was at Universal Studios, and I'm like, why the fuck is there a giant Dino De La Rentis trailer in Office? On the Universal lot, and again, I'm not allowed to talk shit because apparently his nephew is a listener. But because he's a fascinating character for me. For but that's why, because he was the first person to option the rights to Thomas Harris's novels. So he was still listed as an executive producer on the Hannibal NBC Universal show Hannibal, which is really great. Three seasons of pure excellence.
I can't. I binged watched it all on like Amazon or whatever. I cannot believe that was on network TV.
How did they get away with that? It is so foul.
There's so many gross things.
You think there's nothing in Silence of the Lambs that compares to what they put visually on screen at primetime network show.
I can think of like one thing.
With the dick between the legs?
No. No, when he kills one of those guards and like sort of eviscerates him and takes his face off.
Oh, yes.
Gross.
TV this week, Dave.
Phil Donahue examines the human animal. I tried to do that. I tried to do that in a Phil Donahue voice, but not much going on this week. But there is a 5-part miniseries called Phil Donahue Examines the Human Animal. Like, why does Phil Donahue have to be attached to that? Like, are we so?
He was a trusted figure for people, and when it came to stuff like that,
to present the human species, like to be that voice, to be. Like, that authoritative on the subject.
Here we see the human in his natural environment.
So I desperately tried to find actual footage of this, but couldn't. But what I did find was a New York Times article about the first chapter of the 5-part series. First chapter is called Love and Sex, and there are just so many lines in here that I'm going to bastardize by trying to do in the Phil Donahue voice. Phil Hartman, but let's see. The future is very grim indeed, as long as we believe that love is only for Madonnas and sex is a dirty joke. What the world needs now is seeking and sharing of information about love and sex. Like, I don't want to hear Phil Donahue say that. It's disgusting.
Just like, thinking about him plowing Marlo Thomas all the time.
I mean, just can't get... There's that awesome clip of Phil Hartman doing him and talking to that lesbian lady.
Here she is, author of the book Women Good, Men Bad.
In the effort to control female sexuality, we've shaped a culture in which sex itself is a taboo, and men unwittingly put us all into a trap.
Hashtag
not all men.
I think we need a person like Phil Donahue in the world right now.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have.
I'm totally blanking on who he is right now.
He was kind of the gray-haired talk show host before talk shows got like real Jerry Springer. Yeah. He was more Oprah, like the male Oprah.
Yeah.
I remember the name. Let me Google his face.
And he became a pundit with thick glasses, gray
hair.
White
hair and thick glasses.
Wow, not dead.
He's not dead.
He
still occasionally comes on shows and like will argue progressive points and kind of blow my mind on occasion. I didn't know anything about him when I was too young to care about Phil Donahue back then.
Man, these quotes. Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Wow.
And you could have played that clip of Robin Williams saying that in World's Greatest Dad.
We're all too buttoned up. They love man.
Yikes. Moving on to games this week, because again, if this is some of your first episode, 86 for TV, not a lot happened.
Yeah, we're looking at specific weeks we have no control over what the date range is, and summer TV took time off.
Yeah, so because you're either watching golf, bowling, or you were outside doing one of those two
baseball,
things.
Baseball, or there's like clip shows of shows that are not airing new episodes, or networks like Battle of the Network Stars.
Such as Cat Squad.
Cat Squad.
Games this week, again, 86, there's not a lot of happening in the West, because there was Video Game Crash, famously in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. After Atari, and a lot of flooding of the market of poor quality
Nintendo
games.
Slowly building up.
Nintendo,
steam.
The NES is out in America, but only there's not a lot happening, and there's definitely not weekly or even monthly releases for NES at this point. But PC games have some stuff going on. So EA, Electronic Arts, back when they were a scrappy Western dev just doing whatever, released a game called Starflight on IBM and Tandy machines. Wow. I know we love our Tandy.
Jessica Tandy?
This is the music to the Genesis version that would come out later. Starflight is one of the... Boy, that's not going to work. whooshing... But it's basically a space exploration game in these really early days of, like... There weren't, like, sandbox games, per se, where you could, like, just go do whatever and interact with things. But it's like you have ship-to-ship battles, you have mining, you have, like, interacting with NPCs and diplomacy and bartering and stuff. So In a time when games weren't doing a lot of things like that, this became a very inspiring big hit in the early days of PC, Western PC gaming. And like Casey Hudson, who's a Mass Effect director, we've talked to him at our previous jobs and some interviews, and says this game was a direct source of inspiration for Mass Effect, and just the idea of traveling through space and interacting with people. Like, this is pre-Wing Commander, I think. Gameplay-wise, when you watch gameplay, it is like, that's a lot of menus. But that's kind of what a lot of games were then. So, but I don't know. I had never heard of it till I came across it in the list. But if anyone listening played Starflight, the PC or the Genesis one, I'd be
curious. Feel free to yell at us in the comments.
Yeah, tell me what you liked about it.
I just forgot this factoid because it is funny. For Armed and Dangerous, remember Brian Grazer said it was the wrong director. The movie directed before Armed and Dangerous. This is the going back to the John Candy, Eugene Levy security guard comedy. Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando.
Wow.
That was,
that was the movie he made beforehand.
I haven't watched that in like 20 years, and
it's,
I really want to.
It's fantastic.
God. I really
If I show
it.
You the opening scene of him and Melissa Milano living 3 years of a great childhood in 4 seconds, you will be brought to your knees.
Yeah, no,
flips a car over.
My Commando memory is always my dad loved Arnold movies, and we go to rent a movie, and we rent Commando. And we come home, and Commando is on TV. Like, I've never seen my dad get that upset at some random... What? Because this is also back when, like, you know, it's early 80s. People don't have a lot of money yet. Like, the 80s haven't become the booming, like, ridiculous... I mean, where we were, that hilarious perpetually not booming.
Did you try to, like, comment? It's like, at least we don't have to watch commercials, Dad.
No, but it was like... We turned it on right when he's, like, trapeze swinging on top of the elevator in the mall.
Good.
And
so
it's
good.
Just like... And I'm like, and I'm confused because I'm like 5 or 6. Like, did you already put the tape in? And he's like, no, it's on TV. It's like, God damn it.
Yeah.
But music this week, ABBA Live.
Hey.
I love ABBA, but a live album came out. Dwight Yoakam's debut album.
Wow, wow.
Guitars, Cadillacs, etc., etc.
He is my favorite country musician actor.
Yeah.
Dwight Yoakam.
Yeah,
love him.
Yeah. And now two really big things, and I kind of went back and forth on what to play us out, but only because we played a lot of the first type of music already. I'll go with the second. Slippery When Wet came out this week.
Wow.
Ooh,
Bon Jovi, 30 years old, the third album, but this is the one.
You'll know it as that song your daughter will end up stripping to.
Well, if you were a parent in the 80s, yes.
I mean, there are multiple songs she can't strip to.
Yes,
it's just such a variety.
Yeah, Dead or Alive, Living on a Prayer, You Give Love a Bad Name, and this, I guess, would lead into him doing Young Guns, right? That was probably the next album or whatever.
Steel Horse He Rides.
Steel. But yeah, this is a huge album. Normally I would go out with Living on a Prayer because I do still really like that song.
It's
got just the right kind of chorus for singing along drunk to.
Yes, it's perfect for that, and it's still one of those songs where I'll watch a tired bar at 1 a.m. come alive when someone puts it on a jukebox, and it's just like everyone's hammered, and then suddenly everyone has all the energy of their youth and everyone is alive, and it's great.
It feels like a very working class anthem.
Then also out this week is Feel My Power.
Excuse me?
That is not the Mandarin from Captain America and the Avengers, the Data East game. Thank you, everyone who got that. Feel My Power, the debut album from MC Hammer, who borrowed money from A's players to start his own label, I think called Bust It Productions or Bustin' It. I think it's Bust It. But, you know, busting his ass in the streets, walking around, selling albums out of his car.
It's
and
the rumor.
And, like, getting this label together. And then eventually, you know, has a bunch of rap, hip-hop songs calling out other East Bay, which is still a thing to this day. It's still going on with the East Bay, Peninsula, Bay Area, like, everything going on. It's still, like, still a lot of crosstalk. But... between his style and his dancing, and he eventually has a double platinum album after this.
Yep.
Wow.
And then after that double platinum album is 1990's Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him, which sold 10 million copies.
Check. Again, can never hear out of Phil Hartman's voice in the one sketch. Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him.
Don't Hurt Him. In color. But yeah, he goes from, like, you know, the story of hoofing it in the streets to sell albums out of his car to a titanic success, who then has to file for bankruptcy in the early 90s and then spends the rest of his life kind of reassessing his priorities. And he's got quite
he still plays the Bluegrass Festival here every year.
Hardly strictly bluegrass. Damn it.
Hardly strictly bluegrass.
All right. Yes.
That is a lot of...
So I only show up to, like, Steve Martin might play a banjo and MC Hammer always plays.
Yes. That is a lot of consonant clusters to get out of. Hardly strictly bluegrass. It's really tough. But we'll go out with something from Feel My Power, because this is an album I'm not aware of at all, because I'm not... It's a very Bay Area, California thing that after... Yeah, so I... By the time I heard of MC Hammer, he practically had a cartoon. That's when I really heard of him.
Hammer Man,
and then did the fucking Adams Family song.
Do what they want.
And when we come back, what happened this week in 1996?
Now the song gets deeper and the beats get stronger. So take a deep breath before you cross under the line that divides what's yours from mine. In effect, is what I am, cause I serve my time. Concrete, solid beats, stop off with rhyme. I'm fly.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
There was this journalism class. Lights were always low.
Yeah.
And
ooh, I like it.
And like trying so hard to stay awake. And my, finally my head does the full on like, and I go back and smash the fuck out of the monitor behind me. And send up a pigpen level of dust off of the monitor.
Oh, I thought it was a domino effect of like all the monitors.
No, but like the teacher turns around and it's like, if you couldn't echolocate whose head hit the thing, all you have to do is turn around and look at like, okay, like everything's normal. There's a huge cloud of dust around one person.
The guy with the halo around
him. Yes, and I was just like, sorry.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
We are now in peak early 90s, or mid 90s. Real Big Fish sell out. Record company's going to give me lots of money.
Everything's going to be all right.
But yeah, Turn the Radio Off was the album. Came out this week. This was all over
the
radio.
It's like one of three albums. They've never stopped touring and have like no music.
They had an album in 2012.
I know, but they have like they toured on the strength of these two albums. I've seen them so many times. They Real Big Fish has personally been a dick to me at a Taco Bell.
The Real Big Fish?
Yeah, all nine of them.
Collectively?
Yes.
It's ironic. Real
Six
Big
white
Fish
guys with trombones.
Do they only communicate with trombones?
Yes.
But yeah, this was a inescapable song. It was on MTV or M2, which we know launched as of last a couple weeks ago.
If you ever watched a comedy trailer in the late 90s,
and now,
heard Real Big Fish.
I love the idea of Real Big Fish at Taco Bell just because they'll be asked to beef or chicken.
I don't get that reference.
Well, you can only get, they don't have fish at Taco Bell.
Yeah. Spanish Jewish.
I can't eat fish.
Yeah, but on now, Friday, right?
What?
I'm confused.
But now Sami Zayn comes out and skanks to this one. But also out this week, Cypress Hill, unreleased and revamped, and Better Than Ezra's third album, Friction. Friction, baby.
Friction
is the name of their third album.
Well, I've also seen live. Weird.
I don't think I've seen.
I used to see a lot of music and Cypress Hill. Wow.
I may have seen Cypress Hill. Mm-hmm. I can't recall. But yeah, news this week. Oh man. August 15th, I put in a clip of this, Republican National Convention, which this is like season 12, I think, and we're currently in like season 50 of the RNC. Bob Dole is nominated for president with Jack Kemp as his VP, but this is a quick summation of the exciting man that is Bob Dole and what his platform is.
He is the nominee to be, and the Kansas delegates know this so-called soul man's history by heart.
I was born in a very humble background in Russell, Kansas.
Kind of a hardscrabble existence growing up back in the Depression and all that stuff.
Like, the idea of the Depression.
Wow.
Like,
Bob Dole is old.
He was old, and he's still alive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still alive.
And just that wooden delivery, like, him and Carrie were both like, you're Frankenstein's monster.
It didn't help that, like, if you don't know this, and it does somewhat mar the impressions, especially Norm MacDonald's, Bob Dole doesn't have a working arm.
Yeah.
And that's why he always would appear with a stiff arm with a pencil in it, because it's fake.
Mm.
He can't move.
Oh, I thought it was just like...
I thought it was just,
forever, like, claw grip.
He just can't move it.
Yeah, he can't.
It's not
Sorry,
fake.
It's not fake.
Yeah.
But it's a war injury.
Yeah.
It's a fucking war injury. That's all he is.
But yeah, I mean, he was nominated, and then that would go on to fuel the Clinton versus Dole.
Once again, culminated in Great Simpsons Halloween.
Tons of great horror. A Simpsons episode about them being abducted by Kodos. And
one of those episodes
with Phil Hartman. Yeah. This is all collapsing
all
in on
coming
itself.
Together.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, I understood why they nominated him, because it was, you know, contrasting with Clinton, who's like a baby boomer and seemed like a good old boy and loose, and there are rumors about him and women and all that. And here's someone that's like, you don't want to think that he's ever fucked ever.
Yeah.
And then the Viagra ads come after the election.
Wow,
you're like, God damn
weird.
It, now you're making me think about it.
Lewis Black has a great bit about
that. Hand is the only thing that's stiff.
There was a Super Bowl Pepsi commercial, and it's Britney Spears dancing around scantily clad, and he's like, and at the end, A soda bottle explodes to symbolize nothing other than ejaculation. Jesus. Cut to Bob Dole, who says something like to his dog, like, wowee. Yeah.
He tries to the new generation.
Down boy.
Down boy.
Which is even creepier.
Also, news this week on August 16th, Dave.
Yes, at the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, a three-year-old boy falls into a gorilla enclosure.
Whoa. Oh, I remember this.
Binti Hua.
Dicks out for Binti Hua.
sits with the injured boy until the boy is rescued. So 20 years ago, boy falls into a gorilla enclosure and lives, and now we're just so damn trigger happy.
No, that's
we
not
we have
what
no more Harambe. Yeah.
No,
that's not what happened.
That's not what happened.
I had no shit about Harambe until like 2 weeks after.
It's just a giant bummer. And the thing to blame? Just Zeus. It's Zeus, not parents.
We don't need Zeus, period.
Not guns.
But I wonder how different the reaction, like, how Harambe was acting with this child versus how this...
You didn't see the video? Because it's terrifying.
Yeah.
A child being dragged face down in the water and flung around by a fucking silverback.
But I'm sure Harambe wasn't being aggressive.
He was just like... But that's the thing about what he was doing. Everybody's screaming at him, and he's doing mammalian ape-like responses where he beats chest and throws things around like a tire, but this time there's a child in his hand.
Yeah, maybe
it was bad. It was bad, and I don't blame anybody for pulling the
maybe
trigger.
We were just
on,
so chilled out 20 years ago that it's like, oh,
well, it's
baby
also,
girl.
I think the difference might be that it was a female gorilla versus a male gorilla too. That she sort of it's a sweet video. You can see her; she just sort of like pokes him a couple times and sort of picks him up and kind of cradles him a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, she recognizes, oh wait, little one got hurt.
Yeah, so I guess the moral of the story is, if your baby's going to fall into a gorilla pit, it should be a female gorilla's pit.
Leave in the wake of
Harambe. It should be.
The animal experts were saying in the wake of the Harambe incident that gorillas are absolutely gentle giants. Mm-hmm. And the woman I was reading this from, I've worked with them for 20 years. I would never, ever go into a cage with one.
No.
You never know. Nothing ever has happened. I've never seen anything like this happen. Who knows what Harambe would have done, but it can kill you without barely thinking about it on accident.
Yeah, I was just at the zoo, and there was a guy at the gorilla enclosure who was banging on the glass.
Really?
And... it was like I could see him across. There was like he's on one side, I'm on the other side of the enclosure. Ugh. And I'm seeing, and I'm like, I'm gonna go kick his ass.
Yeah.
And Michael's there with me. He's like, come on. And he keeps doing it, like, you know, dance for my entertainment, monkeys. You're just too graceful and wonderful, just sitting there and doing whatever, out. And it's like, it's besides the fact that this comes after the Harambe thing. This also, we're at the San Francisco Zoo, which. What, 5 years ago or
Tiger.
Something?
Yeah.
Tiger got out and fucked up some guys. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And now, oh my God, those tigers are in like a supermax. They are like Hannibal Lecter prisons.
Like a Nicolas Cage face-off prison.
No fucking
little magnetic
way
boots.
Out.
That might be getting close to 10 years
it
ago.
Is.
Yeah. Gosh.
It was 06 or 07. I can't remember which one it was.
It is.
Yeah,
how about
Tiger
it,
got out.
Diana, next time.
Eight people.
Next time you see someone harassing a gorilla like that, I need you to call me.
Okay.
And I'm going to show up, and you're going to pull out your phone, and I'm going to beat him up dressed as Dr. Zaius, and we're going to make the most viral video of all time.
You don't only have to put on the mask, because your body is already here.
It's not the right shade of orange. I'm all about authenticity.
You know, I really like bananas for some reason.
Yeah, I just...
Nobody bangs on Harambe's cage!
I don't understand why you do that.
Yeah, I wish like zoos had the money to like hire like plain clothes people to tackle anyone who's like being a dick to the animals. Like, look, these animals are already going through it. Don't bang on the cage. Don't fucking flash them. Point.
Well, there's a way,
like,
there's
poke
a way
them.
For zoos to be perfectly humane and the animals not know the difference. And I'm just not sure if it's if you can bang on glass. It's probably not that comfortable an environment.
Yeah. August 18th, San Jose Mercury newspaper begins running Dark Alliance, a series by Gary Webb, alleging a connection between the CIA. Nicaraguan Contras, and the crack epidemic in black neighborhoods.
Really?
A Department of Justice investigation found parts were exaggerated, but did find many allegations against DEA agents were true. A movie about Webb, Kill the Messenger, with Jeremy Renner, came out in 2014.
Really?
Yep.
I think I missed this.
Never heard of the movie?
No? Well, okay, I was in journalism school at the time, so obviously it was a huge thing here of like... Because there had been conspiracy theories for a long time about, you know, either AIDS or crack or both. It's like, the CIA made him to try to stop the Black Power movement. It's like, well, I mean, your dates kind of line up. You kind of got a point there. Okay, fine, whatever. Shut up. And then, this giant, you know, not a first-string paper comes out with this massive story basically saying that the CIA, in supporting the Nicaraguan Contras against the commies and such... either help them or turned a blind eye to them funneling tons of fucking cocaine into the U.S., specifically into black neighborhoods and starting the crack epidemic. And the Justice Department looked into it, the FBI looked into it, DEA looked into it, and mostly they figured out he was onto a story, he just didn't do the reporting quite right, or maybe some parts were right and some parts were wrong. He eventually did kill himself.
The author?
Like 10, 11 years ago.
Really? Mysteriously?
It's a little bit mysterious. Yeah, some people don't think it was a suicide.
Yeah.
But I've heard Killed the Messenger was pretty good, actually, the Jeremy Renner movie about it.
Movies. In 1996, House Arrest.
Who cares?
What was House Arrest?
Kevin Pollak and Jamie Lee Curtis play a divorcing couple who the kids then chain in the basement and try and force them to get along, I believe. I could be wrong, but again, who cares?
Human rights violation in the movie.
You're
going to
be very
fuck?
Sorry.
Hey, kids. Yeah, hey, kids, you can fix your parents' problems by abusing them?
Yes, by chaining them.
But I guess it was like a... I mean, The Simpsons did a thing where it made me think it was a stock sitcom / movie thing where it's like, let's lock these people who are angry at each other in a thing.
It is a stock sitcom situation.
Yeah, to be fair.
But I have no idea when else it was ever done besides this movie.
One of my favorite Skinner quotes. It's just behind the door, not even on camera.
Yes. Going to be fair.
Chilling.
Bobby. Stunning.
Tied her up, Bobby.
Unforgettable.
Put him up for me!
From the director of Crimson Tide comes a first-class thriller.
Bobby Rayburn is in for the night of his life.
De Niro, Snipes.
He's in the stadium.
4 stars. Don't miss it. The Fan.
Wow.
It's so unforgettable. How many of you remembered it?
I did see it. I missed a lot of it. It was interesting to read that it was supposed to go... The part of Robert De Niro was playing is supposed to go to a much younger actor. I think, like, even Brad Pitt. But this is before De Niro sucked. Yeah. I loved it. This is the first time we've got to talk about Robert De Niro, who I love. And, like, I love everything up... Meet the Parents is the cutoff. Anything he's done after that is not worth watching. Maybe Silver Linings Playbook.
Tony Scott.
I thought that was odd. Like, you can't just say Tony Scott, the
director
of Top Gun.
Top Gun.
True Romance... No,
and Crimson Tide. I mean, it was a big hit.
Robert De Niro plays a crazed and imbalanced fan of Wesley Snipes' baseball player character, and he ends up tormenting and even killing people involved. And he sees is I have a very vague recollection.
It
could be wrong.
It looks like it has the permission of Major League Baseball because he's wearing a San Francisco Giants hat. Also, nobody in San Francisco cares that much about baseball
at this point.
Back then, fuck no.
Well, I mean, when I moved here, like nobody cared.
Oh yeah.
And also, like, you'd go to baseball games and people would just be reading the paper. Like, I think, like, San Francisco, the vibe here just does not mesh well with sports where people are insane about trivial thing or, like, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's picked up. Back in the day, back when they played at Candlestick, no one wanted to fucking go out there.
Oh,
it's 50 degrees no matter what.
And now, like,
hated Candlestick.
But then what? They won in 10, 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
14.
Yeah, they're on
the
even year kick.
They're on the even year thing. So they're supposed to. I look forward to their victory later this year.
Yes, I look forward to the final frontier.
There was one day when we were here and they won the World Series, I think 2012 maybe, and we were here for some reason.
In the studio?
Yeah, and Karen and I were here, and then we left and drove and were in the middle of the city as they won.
Oh, God.
And I think I told this story on some podcast somewhere, but it was the closest to the zombie apocalypse that I've ever felt, where it was like people, like straight up Dawn of the Dead, where around the corner in front of City Hall, right as we cross in the car, a wave of human flesh flying from every angle,
dressed in Halloween colors,
surrounds the car and is shaking our car and pounding the hood, and then we're going 5 miles an hour, and I'm just like, "Hey, Giants, yay!" And they, thankfully, everyone, like, it was the start.
Wow.
Later, buses would be on fire in the mission because someone
used... You got to burn a mattress. It's a team one.
Someone's using an excuse to do that. Mm-hmm. But it was right at the beginning. So we got to see when everyone was just drunk and happy before someone accidentally elbowed someone and then, I must burn the city to the ground. What about the Fan?
I'm a very angry non-sports fan. And every time the Giants have won the World Series. I am facing the stadium.
Sorry.
And I'm trying to edit audio and video and just like, shut up out there, you damn kids. Boo. Yeah, your baseball team. I'm such an... I hate myself for being like that.
I'm trying to edit this Dennis the Menace clip.
That's great.
This Tiny Toons video has to go up tomorrow.
Yeah, no matter what I'm doing in my neighborhood, I know when the Giants win anytime during, you know, into the playoffs because fireworks.
And then
because I live in one of the only towns where fireworks are legal around here. And everyone stores them up all year waiting for the Giants to win.
The Doppler of every like early 2000s Honda horn being laid on.
I guess I appreciate that they're bringing De Niro back into like Taxi Driver crazy territory.
Yes, that would have been great, but the movie got bad reviews in Bomb Big Time and kind of changed, I think, the roles De Niro took for a while, because he was still at this mysterious method. Who is he? He doesn't come on talk shows. Yeah. No, he won't be on your SNL sketch. I don't know. Not peak De Niro, but like I really did. This is where I became obsessed with De Niro as an actor.
I mixed this movie up with like around like
big
the
fan we were talking
big
about.
Big fan.
Yeah.
It's a
similar premise. Yeah. But it's still a giant fan who meets an athlete.
Yeah.
And then an accident ensues.
But around the same time, there was Celtic Pride, which is about obsessive fans.
Yes, it is.
And a couple years earlier, there was The Last Boy Scout, where it's also murder at the ballpark.
Oh, my God.
Damon Wayans. I'm a big, famous football player.
Let's not forget Sudden Death.
Saw the theater. Saw the theater.
More
sports, please.
More sports. I love that this trailer has the word stupid next to it.
From the creator of Bull Durham and White Men Can't Jump.
The clubhead. We waggle the club.
Comes a story.
Oh! That's a pretty girl. That's such an ugly swing.
About men and women and the games they play.
Jesus Christ.
God, I hate it so much.
Tin Cup.
Kevin Costner, Rene Russo. Allegedly, according to numerous lists that I would never normally read, the best movie ever made about golf.
Fuck you. It's Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, fine. I'll take it. Yeah, never mind. This isn't remarkable at all. Hey, but
the bits I've seen of it were a lot of fun.
Yeah, and Bull Durham is a fun film.
It's very light, and yes, made by the same guy.
It looks very like just that one clip was very Bull Durham, but baseball. Like, why don't you? I'm gonna get up close to you while you're practicing your stroke.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get the like Blues Brothers.
It just sounds like a movie marketed to your dad.
That I gotta find that music. That music was like half of all comedy trailers for years.
Yeah, you know you're gonna see Dan Aykroyd when you hear that trombone.
And then Alaska, which is a movie that came out this week.
Yeah, I don't know it. Never heard of it.
I did look it up, but like literally nothing.
I couldn't recognize any of the names.
Yeah, I didn't recognize any of the names. I didn't recognize any of this stuff. I'll just pull it up just to rattle off. 1996, Alaska, directed by Fraser Clark Heston. two children who search the Alaskan wilderness for their lost father.
I do remember that. Oh, wait.
That makes sense why Charlton Heston would be.
Charlton Heston is in it as Colin Perry, the poacher.
Is the director like his son or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I see. No, but I see the leads are Thor Birch from American Beauty and Vincent Kartheiser, who was on Mad Men.
Wow, I have to see him in 1996.
Pete?
Yeah, he was a kid. It's Pete?
Oh my God.
I gotta watch Alaska. Like, holy shit, Alaska.
A movie with so much to say, I guess, that there are two trailers that were...
No, there's just two clips from the trailer because it's so fucking weird.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Welcome to a new chapter in terror.
At least now she'll know what's eating him.
So I wish this never stopped, to be totally honest. Tales from the... We talked about The Frighteners. The Frighteners was originally planned to be kind of a Tales from the Crypt episode spun off into a movie. May have been the first Tales from the Crypt movie. This movie's fun. Not as fun as Demon Knight.
Yeah, Demon Knight was still to come,
I
believe.
This is Bordello of Blood.
Of Blood.
Here is...
It's holy water, man.
Dennis Miller.
You are out of here.
Oh. Cha-ching.
Tales from the Crypt presents Bordello of Blood.
Man, even I feel like we have to explain Tales from the Crypt.
It was over at this point, but I have a weird relationship with it. Loved it as a kid. I love Tales from the Crypt. I still love the Crypt Keeper as a character. Yeah, still love him.
Voice of Buster Bunny.
Voice of Buster Bunny in Tiny Toons.
And he was
once
in
again.
That movie. Like, he was in the trailer, at least. I mean, I guess introduced the movie?
He intros the movie. I think
you won't be bored. Hello.
Hello, boys and ghouls.
I didn't want to get off on a rant. No, sorry. It's mixing my pop culture references up. But that, yeah, it was an anthology series, not unlike The Twilight Zone, but based on the wonderful, wonderful EC Comics. If you've been out in that room, I have a bunch of them collected. I love the EC Comics. The show technically ruined all those stories. They're... Most of the comic books are from the 1950s. Again, it's sort of a fascinating story. It created, kind of helped create Mad Magazine back before we were obsessed over censoring movies and the internet. The public wanted the comics censored because there were these horror comics, Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, the Avalanche of Fear, that one I made up. So they managed to sneak some of that content by changing EC into Mad Magazine. So it's a magazine. It couldn't be regulated like a comic. And that essentially did create Mad. It ruined EC, but helped create DC and Mad Magazine to some extent. But they were great horror comics, and they were recolorized when I was a little kid. And so I grew up reading these old 1950s horror comics. And Robert Zemeckis wanted to make an anthology series on like The Twilight Zone, Crypt Keeper, Gerard Serling. He introduced new scenarios every time. And the comics they directly adapted, they literally throw in like where this person died of fright. Now it ends with a cheerleader with a chainsaw. Like, I'm not joking. Like, one of my favorite stories, the last thing you see is nothing but a guy wide-eyed, dead, and his hair turned white. Literally ends in the show with a cheerleader with a chainsaw. That is what they did to those stories. So some of them are still pretty fun. I haven't gone back and revisited. I did buy the first season on DVD, standard definition. But the show had ended, and why not extend the brand into films?
Yeah.
Obvious.
They had two shots, and it didn't go well.
Yeah.
I hate having to fall back on these anecdotes so often. One of the things I remember the most, because I loved the Dennis Miller show at this time. Mm-hmm. Dennis Miller was not how you think of him now.
This is still Dennis Miller Live era.
Dennis Miller Live. He has not, as far as I know, expressed much of a political philosophy at all. He hosted the MTV Music or Movie Awards several times. Dennis Miller was hip. This was his shot at movie stardom. I just remember my dad and I were watching him on a talk show, and someone's like, why should people see this movie? He's like, because if they don't, I'm out of the loop. I'll never make another movie. So come on, do it for me, Chechi. My dad just cracked up. I'm out of the loop.
God, that delivery.
Yeah.
It's
a really strange movie. Not bad. Corey Feldman plays a vampire in it. But also not as good. Demon Knight is way more fun with Billy Zane. That movie is really fun. And you'll be like, fuck, why do they ever stop making Tales from the Crypt movies? And then you see this and like, yeah, that wasn't that great.
Yeah, it seems weird. Like, so much of the fun about Tales from the Crypt is, you know, it's an anthology, so every week it's something different. But they'd have like so many different actors.
Yeah.
You know, there used to be like one or two like pretty decent stars. There are a lot of like TV stars or character actors you've seen everywhere. Like, you'd always be seeing people that you recognize. Mm-hmm. And it seems so odd that they thought Dennis Miller needed a vehicle. That's where they're going to go with this. Not any of the tons of people they could have pulled from.
Diana, somewhere there is a giant list we'll see with a bunch of lines crossed through them, and Dennis Miller's at the very bottom for this. You know what? He's nobody's first choice for your vampire killing movie.
Yeah, I just...
He squirts holy water from a squirt gun while delivering quips.
Yeah, and I liked Dennis Miller back then.
Me too.
I was reading his rants book. I learned words because I would watch Dennis Miller's show with a dictionary to understand what he said.
Damn.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea of like, oh, well, it's a horror comedy and that it's like a horror movie, but then he'll say sarcastic shit at them.
Yeah.
That's going to get so old so fast.
Yep. I think I remember trying to watch it again and couldn't get through it because that's how little it held up.
Apparently, M. Night Shyamalan is part of a reboot series that has been 10 episodes will debut in 2017.
I believe one of our patrons is somehow affiliated with this on a technological level.
Have to figure out 10 different twists.
Well, it's weird. I think he's producing it, but I think they're crowdsourcing the scripts, not unlike how they used to do with a ton of anthology series.
I mean, even Next Generation, like Star Trek, had like an open submission policy. Like, tons of fans and people would send in scripts and they workshop them into a show they use.
I had the same cynical reaction when I saw that as everybody else, but then like that's writers made their name by submitting Twilight Zone scripts that Rod Serling would then read and adapt and get a co-writing credit.
Yeah.
Great. Richard Matheson. Hello.
Tales from the Crypt always like remind me one of the comics obviously, and then the bookends of the Crypt Keeper puppet usually delivering horrible puns.
Yep.
It's very strange how similar now it feels to Mystery Science Theater 2000.
kind of
like, well, to it's have like a
host
bookend.
Segment,
yeah.
And then he's at the end. He's like, "This is a sketch based on something you just saw. Goodbye." Yeah.
But also, one of the best TV themes ever.
Yes,
Danny
really
Elfman
good.
Kicking ass.
Oh, yeah, wow,
really
one
good.
Of his first. It's yeah. so cool.
It's a little scarier than Beetlejuice, but not yeah. totally frightening. It's awesome.
Totally forgot about that theme. But the other thing is, I remember when I finally first time got HBO. Mm-hmm. When we got cable, and then there was one of those free weekends yeah. or whatever. We didn't get cable until like late 90, 91 maybe.
Mm-hmm. No, I had to see. I would go be excited to spend the night at people's houses yeah. with HBO to watch Tales from the Crypt.
And I'd heard like kids at naughty. School talk about Tales yeah. from. I'm like, one, we don't have cable. Mm-hmm. Two, of course, we don't have HBO. Mm-hmm. So when we finally did, it was one of those like turn on HBO Tales from the Crypt. My dad is in the room who has just plugged the cable into the back of the TV, and it's Tales from the Crypt. And the first thing is, motherfucker. can I keep watching the show?
And that's what's great. And I've talked about this in Laser Time several times, but like the horror movement up from the 80s until this era was totally for fucking kids.
Yeah,
completely.
Oh, yeah.
Freddy Krueger is a kid's character.
Yeah, yeah. All the stuff was meant for kids.
And not only did can I prove this, this has an animated show spinoff.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
no way a kid so should be familiar weird. With this show at all, but there is an animated Crypt Keeper show.
There's a paywall upon a paywall to get to this fucking yes. show, and it is definitely meant for kids.
Yeah.
TV, though, this week, August 15th, 1996.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, the big thing on TV this week is the Republican convention.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a bit of counter-programming from UPN. They aired a show called Man Oh Man, which was way more popular in Germany. But the basis is it's a beauty pageant, but all the contestants are male and the judges are women, and the losers get pushed into a pool. So it's simultaneously like so innocent, but also kind of lewd for 1996 and UPN. Like, oh, yeah. What do we
Why
do?
Why is that happening now?
I wish
and at
we're
least
never
Japan.
Identity.
I wish instead of pushing them into a pool, because like, oh, then the guys get embarrassed, mm-hmm. but then like maybe they'll be their shirts will be wet, and it's like no. Instead, they have to divulge personal secrets to each other.
Ooh, and really and share intimacy
and open up and care.
Yeah.
That's what they have to do.
Yes.
The winner can do whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
the
loser has to tell us what they really feel.
Yeah,
but unlike the election, Bob Dole won here.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm the sexiest man. Man, oh, man.
Bob Dole.
Don't push me in the pool.
We never did mention he did refer to himself many times in the third person.
Yep.
No.
Bob Dole does not want to be objectified.
Can't swim in the pool. I only got one working arm.
You're looking at my arm, aren't you?
Swam through a pool of blood in Vietnam. Not fond of this.
Jesus Christ.
Bob Dole can't wait for the talent competition.
Bob Dole has been an old man for 2 decades. Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. Longer than that.
Yeah. But I guess it's... When you said UPN, I was kind of struck like UPN itself had already been around for a year.
Yeah.
But briefly, UPN was a network launched after ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, mm-hmm. Fox in the 90s.
Kind of I think the same year as WB.
Yeah, they were around the same time, and then eventually they would merge into the CW. But UPN was a decades-long thing. This ties into Star Trek prominently.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's Paramount.
Paramount wanted so bad to have a network. Even in the 70s, they were like, we want a network, and we want the groundswell of support from Star Trek to have a new show called Star Trek Phase 2. We're going to have a new show that will be the anchor for our brand-new network, the UPN, and then... I can't remember who took over Paramount. Was it Michael Eisner? I think it was went to Disney.
Yeah, Eisner went to Disney.
Yeah, I think it was him, and he was the one who was like, no. Ooh, no, Star Wars was huge. Star Trek needs to be movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to make a Star Trek movie, and that's what we're going to do. And then that kind of slowed the whole process of making this UPN. And then when they finally did it in 1995, mm-hmm. at kind of the peak of Star Trek's popularity, with Next Generation had wrapped up 7 years of winning Emmys and setting TV records and syndication records and changing syndication forever.
Deep Space Nine was running on NBC at the time.
No, Deep Space Nine was also syndicated.
It was also syndicated?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of them were... Next Gen pioneered this idea of first-run syndication.
Sure.
And then Deep Space Nine did the same thing. And then Next Gen went off the air. First Contact was the movie in 96 that we just talked about. But in 95, UPN banked on Voyager being the thing that would launch the network. And it's like, well... We didn't even have UPN because it's a terrestrial broadcast network. So unless there's a friggin' tower broadcasting that signal, you're not getting it.
And
we didn't have it for years. So.
I lived in the capital of Florida, and the whole world is making fun of UPN and WB.
Yeah.
We don't have it.
Yeah.
And I can't see anything that's on it.
Yeah.
And I think at one point, a UHF channel was like, all right, 3 days a week from 8 to 10, we'll pipe in UPN programming. And that's because people want to watch SmackDown.
Yeah. ABC in our market, at least, ABC finally, like, Voyager wasn't even a year old, and they were like, Okay, fine. Voyager episodes will syndicate immediately.
Because I know it was capable of seeing Voyager episodes without UPN.
There was a period of time where it was like, no, only on UPN. You got to get it. And then it's like, you have to actually build
infrastructure. You have to build an antenna.
Have to send the signal to me, man. I can't watch it. But anyway, UPN.
We did a Laser Time about like the most... the first original shows from networks.
Yeah.
And UPN's was like the very first thing that ever aired on UPN was Star Trek. Yeah. And it is the most watched first programming from a channel. Like,
really?
When it launched, I think it had something like 10 or 20 million viewers because it's like, there's a new channel and Star Trek.
At a time when cable was big, but the internet wasn't. Yeah. So like if a new channel debuted and a new show was on it, and especially with Star Trek being as big as it was, and the first episode of every Star Trek is 2 fucking hours, so it's basically a little movie, so you get to watch. Anyway, that's UPN. That games this week? Nothing. I don't think anything video game wise happened in 96 this week. Again, this is kind of a lull between some vague release dates that we've talked about prior to this for Saturn and PlayStation games. But after this, we're getting into August, and especially September of 96 is where the N64 launches. Crash Bandicoot Nights is about to get released in the U.S. A lot of stuff's about to happen. But we'll go out with the Tales from the Crypt theme because that seems appropriate. And we come back this very same week in 2006.
Ships at Sea. This is Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And there's pretty much only one movie coming out this week. It's the 1941 version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, starring Spencer Tracy and Ingrid Bergman. It's tough for me to say this is the best version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but it's a really, really watchable one. Spencer Tracy is great because you actually like Dr. Jekyll. Like most versions of this story, Dr. Jekyll's already a real, like, weird obsessive creep, and then he turns into Mr. Hyde and he's just even crazier. This one, he's Spencer Tracy, so he's super likable, but he's very dedicated, and then he basically is like a werewolf. I think the better version is probably 1931 with Frederick March, and that one is really cool because they actually used black and white photography to do special effects. Like, they did all the scary makeup in one color of makeup and shined a color that, like, a red makeup. And they put, like, a red light on him, and in black and white photography, he would be invisible. And then they'd slowly turn it to, like, a green light, and it seems like he's transforming before your eyes with no cuts, no nothing. It's amazing that they could figure out how to do that. It's a great transformation scene. If you don't want to watch the whole Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde from 31... go see if you can find the transformation scene. It's something to see. And that's it for this week. Stay a classic.
Is Peter, Bjorn, and John.
I really like that song.
Young folks, such a pleasant song. 10 years old this week.
We're no longer young folks. We are really old now.
Do they have any other songs?
So this is the album Writer's Block. You might remember from that hit game Lips.
No.
Whoa.
Nobody.
Wow, I haven't thought of that in years.
Nobody has.
All right.
But yeah, Peter, Bjorn, and John, I think they'd had albums before, and then they just did a different thing with this album, and this is the song that blew up, so...
I don't
know if this song itself was in a lot of commercials, but it spawned what I just think of like commercial music. Yeah. Like, wasn't whistly stuff while somebody piles into a minivan or something.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had the weird incident of like being in a car with a much younger girl in Florida who is like primarily exposed to country music and Disturbed ripoffs, and this song came on my Pandora, and it blew her fucking mind. Like, what is this? This is so good.
It does seem like
wiping off her Insane Clown Posse makeup.
My whole life. This does seem like white people Pied Piper music. Like, this way, white people. Don't look behind the door. And you're like, this is so pleasant. I really like listening to this. And you just fucking...
How they get a turnout at every Pinkberry opening. Oh.
Man. But this does, like, this sound would come to, like, summarize a lot of 06 to 2010, 2012 mm-hmm. songs.
It's really easy to make fun of, and I don't necessarily love it, but it was at least different. A different... A music that felt or sounded different. Because sure. I think a lot of the early 2000s rock or indie bands were like so obnoxiously like, this is just the fucking Beatles, man. This isn't anything. This isn't a new thing at all. This is just old. I don't know. I do appreciate it for that.
Yeah, I like them layering it. There's a whole bunch of layers in there. Yeah. It's got a nice beat. It's got a nice bass line. You know,
it's nice.
You can dance to it. I give it a 9.
I think next month Neon Bible comes out, which be ready to talk about that shit. Also, see, Christina Aguilera put out a new album, which had this like old Hollywood look. She like dud herself up to look like 30s, 40s Hollywood era, and then
you hear that, Diana?
I'm listening.
The album's called Back to Basics. No one has ever spoken of it. I've never heard a song off of it. I guess if I watch The Voice, they probably told me to buy it.
I think they use it to raise her seat up in The Voice right now.
If it's called Back to Basics, I mean, is it like covers or is it these are original songs?
I don't know. I think they're all new songs, but like...
So is Back to Basics for Christina Aguilera like stretching one note out into like three different octaves?
Come on over.
It does suggest she did something she regretted on her previous album that we don't know, not being Christina Aguilera fans. All right, that was dumb. I should not have covered a bunch of James Bond themes. We're going to go back to basics.
It's a double album inspired by her 20s, 40s idols, Billie Holiday, Otis Redding, Etta James, Ella Fitzgerald.
All right.
Described by Aguilera herself as a fusion of old school jazz and soul inspirations with a modernized style.
All right, I'm listening.
Remember there was a time where she was basically indistinguishable from Britney Spears? And back
in the day.
They were both on the same Mickey Mouse show.
Yeah, but like a half decade later, she's doing like, this is an album based off my old soul favorites. And Britney is swiping at cars while bald with an umbrella.
Mm. Yeah, it's tough times. Poor Britney.
Well, yeah. Now they're both doing great. So
leave Britney alone, Dave. That meme itself is almost a decade old.
Oh, boy.
News this week, August 13 and 14.
It's really going to date Meet the Spartans.
Awesome people, Tony J and Bruno Kirby died.
Yay.
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, within a day of each other. Tony J was in his 70s. We talked about him about a month back when we did Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. He played the bad guy in that. He's got the best voice ever.
Best voice ever. Bruno Kirby, man.
Bruno Kirby was only 57.
Yeah, that's a real big bummer. I thought he'd be around. Because last episode I talked about the Larry Sanders Show, and he constantly plays himself getting his dick kicked in as a guest on the show, like being bumped and complaining. Yeah. But that guy's great, dude. Like, I just watched When Harry Met Sally. Like, Bruno Kirby, man. What happened to that? God damn it. Too soon.
And then, like, I never even realized for years and years, and I watched Godfather 2, and I was like, holy shit, he's speaking Italian all through Godfather 2. Yep. What the fuck?
Bruno Kirby. And it was such a cool...
And everyone said he was, like, the nicest guy.
He looks like the nicest guy and really just has, like, the coolest old-timey name of all time. Yeah. Bruno Kirby.
Yeah. Movies this week, Accepted. Justin Long, Blake Lively...
Oh, that really fucked up my throat.
A group of high school graduates create their own fake college after being rejected from the colleges to which they applied.
I did see this movie.
And I have to,
wait,
part
is
of
this
it.
A sequel to Camp Nowhere?
No, but it feels like
that one I did see.
But first of all, as a white person, you cannot be rejected to college. Like there, I'm pretty sure that
there's a quota. It must be filled.
There are community colleges you can go to with no matter how.
But they wanted to go to a specific school.
But I do remember this because like it also features in one of his first starring roles,
Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill, he had that brief cameo in 40-Year-Old Virgin, where he's trying to buy the
brief cameo. Like as far as scenes go, that is like 3 minutes.
But he steals that one scene.
He totally does, and it's just so awesome to see. Yeah, we still have Jonah Hill around. He's still kind of cool.
And then within a year, he'd be doing Superbad.
Yeah.
So this is basically his ascent
of Jonah Hill.
Like we mentioned a few episodes ago, You Mean Dupree, where Seth Rogen is like, you're the friend? That's so weird. You're never the friend. You are the guy who has the friend. And this is basically, yeah, the one time that he was, like, the supporting guy. Like, he's not even, yeah, in the top build. Mm-hmm. Lewis Black, I think, is above him, probably.
Yeah,
as,
yeah, yeah. And
as
Justin,
the teacher.
The weird career trajectory of Justin Long, who I think is objectively awesome and never stars in anything. And when he does, that's fine. But it does feel kind of weird. He's a good supporting player. Mm-hmm. What was that Kevin Smith movie? He's fucking hilarious.
Zach and Miri.
He's so fucking... Like, all of his deleted scenes of him just improvising. Like, this dude's awesome. A genius. And he does he does a ton of voice work and a lot of supporting roles. But, man, I wish I saw Justin Long and more stuff than Apple commercials.
He was the star of Tusk.
Of Tusk. Yeah, of Tusk. I like Justin Long.
The movie is completely forgettable.
Drag me to hell. I was like,
eventually, I think they go to a good college, or the college that they made up becomes a regular college. So dumb.
Finally accredited. Hooray! Material Girls with Hillary and Haley Duff.
Ooh,
which is a name.
Haley Duff.
Two names. I
that's
can't.
Her sister.
Are they related?
Yeah.
Angelica Houston. Brent Spiner apparently was in it.
Right. It's just, we're like, I just looked this up because I was like, it's one of those things I can remember the poster and just being like, well, this isn't for me, so I'm ignoring you. It's like she has to take charge of the family company and stuff happens. It's got like a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. Wow.
This also is a weird, like, this is inside baseball, but when you're in Google Docs, you know, when you type people's names in Word, like most names it knows.
Yeah.
But if somebody's name is different, the Word's like, I don't know what that is. That's a weird spelling. Please correct it. It has a little red line underneath it or whatever.
Yeah.
Google Docs, in a clear sign that it is totally aware of what you're typing, anyone's name that you type, it will know, oh, you meant this.
Mm-hmm.
Like even Angelica Houston, who I spelled like Angelica Houston. It's like, no. Angelica is with a J. And Houston is Houston, and it's like, you know what I'm typing, and you know what you're correcting. These names are like, and it'll like auto, like if I type in like John C. A. John Candy, get the fuck out of the pack. Anyway, also at this week, The Illusionist with Edward Norton, Jessica Biel, and
really like to see this.
Paul Giamatti.
It looks so fucking, like, I don't know, what do you want to say? Like, over the top and weird, and like, Edward Norton is awesome in everything. Doesn't look like he is in this. Really weird accent.
Okay.
But yeah, fucking Paul Giamatti, I'll see fucking anything with him.
Yeah, but it's one where, I mean, it suffers that it got mixed up with The Prestige.
The Prestige, which is awesome.
I love The Prestige. That's cool.
I did finally see that. That was good. The Prestige. Yeah. But yeah, that came out like right around this, right? They were very close.
Yeah, they're pretty close to
each other. I think it came out we would have talked about it if it came out afterwards. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Prestige is about to happen.
But I was all over Christopher Nolan at that point, so that was the one. I had made my choice.
And then, famously, after a barrage of social media, at a time when social media was a brand new thing.
A barrage of insincere support.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane!
At least that part was
snakes
awesome.
On a plane after, like, jumping on, like, this is the kind of thing that Netflix would put out, like, Kung Fury now.
Yeah.
With, like, this sincere, insincere send-up of this type of movie.
Yeah.
But with Samuel Jackson doing a movie with snakes on a plane.
Yeah.
And, like, what was the story? Like, it was a joke.
Well,
and then
it was a tentative title. The original working title was Venom.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I think it has roots in, like, one time during World War II, a bunch of tree snakes got on a plane and a bunch of people got dunked from not being able to get away from the so somebody wrote a screen, like a B-movie screenplay about a similar instance. And I think what really sucks about the movie is that it was always a B-movie, and then after the trailer comes out, everybody's like, what the fuck? Snakes on a plane? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But the movie was supposed to be... It's a BPG movie meant to appeal largely overseas. It wasn't meant to be enjoyed ironically by anybody, and to that extent the movie doesn't go very far, as far as you'd like it to. It's not as silly as you'd want it to be, and that scene in specifically had to go back and be reshot because it was not in the movie. That was part of the memes once people heard of the title.
Well then I mean
some of that was on Samuel L. Jackson because they changed it, the title. It was like Pacific Air something something, like the number. And like interviewers would say, like, tell us about Pacific Air. So is that, and he'd be like, oh, you mean snakes on a plane? Yeah. No, we should call it snakes.
We should
call
it snakes on a plane. Yeah,
yeah. And then they made the logo of the snakes white wrapping around the fuselage of the airplane.
It is great how Samuel L. Jackson can just be like, "I want this thing to happen in the movie, so it's happening in the movie." Like, I want a purple lightsaber. Well, give me a purple lightsaber. I want to be in Star Wars. Put me in Star Wars.
That is something that also happened for some fucking reason. Yeah. George Lucas, I'll never alter any canon. Oh, whatever you say. Whatever you say, Jules.
Pretty cool.
Yes, your name will be Mace Windu. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, whatever.
But then this also. In keeping, so man, this was so weird. Like at a time when like Twitter wasn't really like, we even talked like Twitter only launched mere weeks ago and was not a thing. Social, like MySpace was kind of waning, and Facebook was in that weird between point of being a thing for college kids and a thing everyone could use.
MySpace thing.
it was MySpace, even though like it was kind
host
of
host the image somewhere and embed that HTML on your comment board.
You only have like four images or something.
But like, weird. And it was like this weird prolific thing on what. Was the beginning of social networks at the time,
of memery,
and like getting linked around to like this snakes on. And there was a thing where you could enter your friend's phone number.
Oh yeah.
And Samuel Jackson had recorded a bunch of names, and my friend Chris, not you, this other Chris, who had moved, and we hadn't seen each other in like a year. I just like, yeah, send that to him, and it's Samuel Jackson going like, Chris. I need you to pick up the fucking phone, like just weird shit like that. And it's like, that's a weird, very, especially for 06, that's a very, you know, ahead of its time idea to like game the system.
That was great. I know Michael did that to me, and I was actually working at a booth at the San Francisco like gift emporium show thingy that it's like for wholesalers to come and pick up stuff for like Christmas, figure out what they're going to stock in their stores, and. You know, I'm just sitting there, like, minding my own business with my friend. His phone rings. And he's like, oh, Michael's calling me. And all of a sudden, I just hear him. And I can hear just, because we're in this huge, we're in the convention center. I can just barely hear. Just the look on his face of, like, first confusion and then just joy. He's so happy. And then I didn't have a cell phone back then. So then I got home and I'm like, what the fuck was that? And he's like, this is, I don't know, it was just really weird. Like, he wouldn't tell me what happened. Then I got home and it was on my answering machine, so I kept it for a while.
And then as part of the like being self-aware or being hijacked by the fans, it became this like, oh, you know what's even funnier is, if remember how in the 80s all those movies would be edited so bad for TV and they'd have like Mother, Father, Chinese Dentist, like the Mr. Show thing with
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps, Big Lebowski.
Yeah, so things like that. And so they, like, Samuel Jackson went back and recorded lines for that express purpose of being funny, and then that created this line.
We gotta clear the snakes out of the cockpit.
Yeah, clear the snakes out of the cockpit, yeah.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane!
And it's like, on one hand, I love it, but on the other hand, I've still never seen this movie.
But that's what sucks about it.
It's fine.
It's not what you want it. It's just not what. It was just weird because once it.
It's not Sharknado.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, yeah. Right. It's not supposed to be funny. It's just a okay B movie. Right.
Yeah. It's a really cheap Air Force One, which is a movie I hate that was very successful. but yeah, what I really hated about it was that. Remember, it didn't do well. So all of a sudden, everybody's like, "Yeah, the internet is a failure and can't be used to market anything." And that was the lesson everybody took away.
Right.
Yeah. But it was like, oh, if you listen to the internet, this is going to be the biggest movie of all time. And like, fucking nobody went.
Well, because the reviews were out, and that it's an incredibly sincere movie. It rarely goes over the top. If you can tell by that clip, you always forget that Kenan Thompson is in this movie. He is not listed in the first 10 cast members.
And Juliana Margulies from Good Wife.
And a bunch of unrecognizable blondes.
At that point, only on SNL for 3 years.
Wow.
He's still there.
I don't know.
Still there. Wow. Well, he might not be next season, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But the line I remember from this that Carolyn always uses is, like, someone's been bit by snakes. And time is of the essence. And the guy says, time is tissue.
What?
Like, time is tissue, like, because every second that goes by, that venom is destroying more body. So that has become a constant phrase in just, like, time is tissue.
In your household.
Yeah, time is tissue. TV, though, this week, August 12th, the Sci-Fi Channel airs Savage Planet.
Oh, yeah.
I ascended to heaven.
You know, unfortunately, I couldn't find any clips of this, but it just sounded pretty amazing. Earth can no longer sustain human life.
We were so many.
So survivors travel to the planet Oxygen.
Excuse me?
The network?
Yeah, no, the planet Oxygen.
Golden
because
Girls reruns?
It has what we need, oxygen. So in order to save the rest of humanity. However, they soon discover that it's home to a form of enormous prehistoric bears.
Yeah.
And they attack. Try and play dead. I'm going to see you.
Yeah, so...
Macho man bear.
I'm just imagining really terrible CGI bears mauling
so
B-level actors.
That's what you encounter on another planet.
Bears.
Fucking bears.
Bears. We went 20,000 light years.
Fucking bears.
And there's just bears here. But the fact that the wiki, like, some synopsis summarizes it as prehistoric bears, and it's like, it's not prehistoric on this planet, man. Yeah. That's just where the planet
it's
is.
Historic.
Your centrist view of the world. Anyway.
More importantly, August 16th, the final episode of the reality series, DMX, Soul of a Man, airs on BET. Here's a clip from the trailer for the show.
The dog is here!
My name is Earl Simmons, but I am the dog. DMX. And this is my life.
It's
did
just,
they not have any DMX's music to use?
Yeah, I don't know if even yeah,
play the Anthrax in the
how
opening.
How do you not hard cut to fucking party?
What?
Yeah,
but I love the episode names of each episode for DMX Soul of Man. The premiere is called Exodus. Next episode is X-Con. Then there's Existing, and there's Externalization. And exiled, and the finality, which
excrement.
The finale was called Exhilarated.
I bet you would love that pun, master.
I do. It's
great. Hubba hubba.
I miss DMX. I think he was one of the more fascinating. I call him a pop star, I guess, because he didn't have an album. His first album did crazy business.
Oh yeah.
But was also a really strange individual.
Yeah.
Like he. Would talk about like, yeah, my album just went double platinum and I just stole this lady's purse. And like, why don't you come to this party? He's like, there's that documentary about his tour where like, he's on tour with Kanye West and like, there's all these big ass parties and he's just like, wait, where's DMX? Like, oh, he's he drove 2 miles away to go race an RC car in an abandoned field. That's what DMX does.
Yeah, and like, there's one clip in that trailer. It's not great audio, but like, it's just him making friends with a cowboy. Like, that's because it's what DMX wants to do. Like, this guy seems cool. I'm going to be friends with him.
I'm sorry. It sucks that it's not on just because I really would have loved to have seen him accept an Emmy and a wife beater.
He had just had an album out a couple weeks ago that we briefly touched on in 2006. It was called Year of the Dog, .. Again. And
so it's 12 years later, it's come back around to Year of the Dog. That's how the Chinese astrology works, right?
But this was in 06, so yeah, he's 2 more years.
2018, still dogging.
Okay.
Still dogging, straight dogging. Video games this week in 2006. I thought this was sooner, so I'm a little surprised. Final Fantasy VII: Dirge of Cerberus, the spin-off.
About that,
impossible to say. I'm amazed you did that.
Only because
Dirge
of Cerberus. It's the rural juror of Final Fantasy VII: Rural Juror. Dirge of Cerberus was so. Final Fantasy VII came out in '97, and was a slam dunk for multiple reasons that one day we'll talk. Well, next year, if we do this for literally one more year, we'll get there.
Patreon.com/LaserTime. Yes. Make it happen.
Make it possible. Mm-hmm. But in 2006, this Dirge of Cerberus released. This is one of the. Vincent Valentine is the playable character who is, you know, literally a collar up to his nose with belts everywhere.
So cool, though.
And a metal hand with claws on it. And is everything you'd think of, like, late 90s, early 2000s anime design with Tetsuya Nomura belts everywhere. But is like, it becomes this, like, third-person action game. Mm-hmm. And it took so long for Final Fantasy VII to be this multi-million-selling, kind of platform-defining, medium-defining even, for CD-ROM to show, like, look what games can become with CDs that no one else is really doing up to this point. Look, everything about FF7, there's a reason why it became millions of people's first RPG. Like, it's a little... touched on too much at this point, but there's a reason why it was so big. So it still took almost 10 years to really finally jump on the. Advent Children is a movie that will.
All know you got to cook every Square game for 10 years.
Yeah,
it's
but
not
like,
gonna be good
but
otherwise.
Like this is like there's gonna be Crisis Core, there's gonna be Advent Children the movie. Mm-hmm. And then Dirge of Cerberus is like, I think the first spinoff game that finally came out. And it's just kind of like, but of all the characters I would play as, I don't care about Vincent Valentine.
He's technically an optional character.
He's an optional character. So he's like, you'd have to do a little legwork to find him in the game. And this is just a little bit about the background. It takes place after FF7. And it just starts expanding on the story that was already expanded upon quite a bit, and it gets even more. And then I think Advent Children kind of digs into him a little more, and then his design informs Cloud's look in Kingdom Hearts, because Cloud in Kingdom Hearts is definitely not very cloudy. He looks
very
a little
dark.
He looks a little bit more like Vincent.
You can see that on our YouTube channel, people.
Yeah, we played through almost all of it.
We got
at this
the
point.
Machine back up to speed. I think we have to start again.
Yeah, we gotta finish that game. But if you want to see Chris and I play through Kingdom Hearts, YouTube.com/LaserTime, we've been doing it. But yeah, I didn't really play this at all, and it just kind of passed me by. Part of it's because it took them so long to capitalize on FF7 hoopla.
It's also a PlayStation 2 game in mere months before the PlayStation 3 comes out. So
not only is it a mere like 2 months before PS3 comes out in America, FF12 12 is going to come out in like a month or like 2 months. It's like October 31st, 2006. Like your Final Fantasy 7 spinoff game is coming out right before fucking 12.
Yeah.
8,
okay.
9, 10, 11 all happened, and now you're finally getting to the games from that really popular one almost a decade ago. It's really weird, because that's another weird thing to remember at this point is 97 is Final Fantasy 7. 98, there wasn't a Final Fantasy. 99, 8. 2000, 9. 2001, 10. They had three huge numbered entries in the franchise back to back to back to back, and then 5 years go by. 12. 4 years go by, 13. 6 years go by, 15. Like, they're getting longer and longer and longer in these gaps, and it was just crazy to think back on 99, 2000, and 2001. 2000 also had Chrono Cross, so it's like so much output in the same crunch time. Anyway, 99 Nights also came out this week. A name no one has thought about.
Wow.
Kind of a Dynasty Warriors imitator, but I think it beat Dynasty Warriors in Japan, like to next gen, to get on these 360 platforms.
Because it has 1 million troops.
1 million troops. Wow. You will be sucked, but Samurai Warriors might have hit Japan first, I can't remember. But it's that kind of like waves and waves of enemies come at you and you just like mash them with your medieval weapons. And 99 Nights also out this week, Xenonide, which was, I only remember because working at Radar, our Xbox editor had to review this game. Xenonide, original Xbox. The original Xbox shmup.
Six.
Like a shooter. Like a shoot 'em up shmup. I fucking hate shmup. They're shooters. I hate shmups. Hate that term so much. Taking shooter back. But the idea that there was a of all original Xbox games coming out, it's like, it's one, there's an original Xbox game in 2006 in August, and two, it's a disc, and three, it's just a shooter. Like, it's just such a weird, like, this game's dying on its feet, you know that?
And it's a very Japanese genre on the original Xbox, which is not a haven for Japanese games, except for, like, Sega's.
Just, strange, weird mismatch, and then I don't think it reviewed all that well, but oh well. Dirge of Cerberus, I'm surprised wasn't earlier than that, but it's 10 years old this week.
Dirge. Just a word I don't hear anybody use.
Only in terms of funerals. Right here. I always have thought there would be a Castlevania that tried to get Dirge in there, but never happened.
Dirge sounds like a redneck in a camouflage hat.
There's my friend Dirge.
Hey man, where's Dirge going?
but that's the end of the show.
Oh.
Thanks for listening. Patreon.com/LaserTime is what supports the show, and your efforts unlocked said show. We're also on the Wondery Network, and Wondery has another show that they just began called Found.
Found, the Davey Rothbart's magazine. Ooh. Yeah, really, really cool.
I love Found magazine. I've sent them crap.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
What is the premise, though, of Found?
A lot of people usually submit things that they find, and you try and... there's like a dumb story you can discern from almost every little item that has been custom made by human beings. There's awesome mixtape stories or like a someone breaking up with somebody via note. Like you pick up that and just try and discern like where did this happen and why. I don't know. Like I'm a big fan of the magazine. Have not heard the show yet, but I would say I've noticed we're going a lot longer than normal as of late. And occasionally the iTunes podcast app does not save my space. Maybe check out the Wondery site. Wondery.com/302010. No dashes anymore.
Yes, but the words 302010.
302010.
But you can also go to lasertimepodcast.com and find all of our other articles and shows and all that other stuff. We had a recent Laser Time talking about Development Hell. Ooh. Movies and projects, games that get stuck and languish for years. And in the case of Spider-Man, decades, and other things like that. But we have other stuff going on.
Indeed. We have a chronological breakdown of The Simpsons called Talking Simpsons with your host, Bob Mackie of Retronauts fame. And Henry Gilbert, formerly of 302010 fame. If you want to hear Henry, he's on that show kind of exclusively for the time being. We'll see, but I don't know. Let him know, people. H-E-N-E-R-G-E-Y.
No, not on my show.
On Twitter.
And the show is funded by Patreon. Patreon.com/LaserTime. Just $5 a month gets you so much. We do a weekly exclusive show, Bonus Time, where we talk about the stuff we're into now.
Yeah.
And it's also the exclusive home of Cheap Podcast, our pro wrestling podcast, so it's good fun.
It's really hard to keep pro wrestling and The Simpsons out of this show, so it must be cordoned off, quarantined to their own programs.
Into their own shows.
Yeah. All right. And if you want to talk video games, there's Video Game Apocalypse, and I'm on Twitter if you want to talk classic movies at Listen A Nerd. Not Lacina Nerd, that's somebody else.
The French.
I am French.
The biggest French fan of John Cena.
I am French and I love John Cena.
I love j'aime John Cena.
Juan Cena. That brings us to the final segment of the show.
Oh, birthday!
Last time we played the Death Day song because Metalocalypse debuted 10 years ago. Last.
Birthday!
There we go. Birthdays that happen in this very week that we were talking about. Sebastian Stan. Fidel Castro, Alfred Hitchcock, Danny Bonaducci, Halle Berry, Kofi Kingston, Magic Johnson, Steve Martin, Ben Affleck, Napoleon Bonaparte, Madonna, Steve Carell, James Cameron, Vanessa Carlton, Kathy Lee Gifford, Paige, wrestler, is 23 years old.
Wow.
And she's already been wrestling for like four years that I've watched her. Yeah. I'm old. Robert De Niro, Sean Penn, Davy Crockett.
Wait, the legendary man?
Yes, that person. Okay. I'm taking it on faith.
Fess Parker?
I'm taking it on faith that's correct. The quiz, though. Born in this...
On a mountaintop in Tennessee.
Skinned a bear alive when he was only three.
You guys know this.
Wow. 1969. Uh-oh, I'm going to start the song over.
Take his two.
1969. Debuted in 1996's Bullet. He had parts in Ransom. Saw. Has a famous brother. He was in Band of Brothers.
It's not Donnie Wahlberg, is it?
It's Donnie Wahlberg.
Donnie Wahlberg? What?
Donnie.
The fucking Wahlberg. Have you seen his own show, The Wahlbergs?
Wahlberger.
They have their own reality show.
Wahlbergers.
I had to see the same episode 5 times in a row.
On a plane?
On a plane. Ugh. They just kept looping it. And I'm like, how? What
experiment.
What madman?
Sir, we've done our research. People want to watch this show over and over.
Over and over again. But we'll go out this week with the Snakes on a Plane.
Yes! Cobra Starship.
Oh,
Cobra Starship, the theme song.
Insane song for like built out of like seemingly 4 different decades of music.
Yeah, we were talking about this, where it has like the anthemic cheering singability of an 80s pop song, but
and
then
it goes
has
into Evanescence, and then somebody raps.
Somebody raps in the middle of it. It's just like, yeah, this is no matter what decade you were born in, you will latch on to some part of this song. But yeah, this is Cobra Starship, Snakes on a Plane, parentheses, Bring it. And we'll be back next week with more of what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and the rest of it. You know how the show is.